So grieving her death was a big part of how I got good at Frisbee. So had that not happened, who knows where I'd be. But it really allowed me to channel my energy and my focus into being out in a field by myself throwing a Frisbee, which there's not a lot of people that would ever think about doing that, because most people, when they throw a Frisbee, they play catch with a friend. But that's actually now my best event, is throwing and catching my own throw. I'm a 5-time world champion in that. I've done that on ice skates. And it's cool because you look back and you can easily trace that back. You know, Steve Jobs talks about that, about connecting the dots, looking back. And, you know, as a kid, I learned to skate, then started playing hockey, then got into Frisbee. So you can kind of combine all of those skills together. Now I do Frisbee on ice, and I love it a lot.
This is the Phys Ed Cast. Well, the world has definitely changed a lot since we last spoke, especially in the physical education space. We've been on quarantine from COVID-19. We've had at-home learning, and now some of us are starting to head back to school. I actually headed back to school 2 weeks ago now. In my second week of return to learning with small classes, not being able to use equipment, shared equipment, and physical and social distancing. So a lot of things have changed. I actually recorded this episode with Frisbee Rob earlier in the school year before the COVID situation hit. And it's interesting to go back now and listen to this episode and hear some of the things that Rob talked about in terms of Frisbee and how Frisbee can be used in a physical education setting. Since going back with physical distancing rules, I have used the Frisbees quite a lot, and it's been really interesting to go back and listen to this conversation. So I really hope with this conversation with Rob that you can think about ways that maybe you use Frisbees and discs in your school. Rob, Frisbee Rob McLeod, is a motivational speaker and Frisbee ambassador living in Calgary, Alberta in Canada. He currently holds 6 world records. He's a 12-time world champion and the Canadian distance record holder. He's appeared in the 2014 and 15 Guinness Book of World Records, Ripley's Believe It or Not, and the McLean's 2014 Canada Day edition. He also has a children's book that he'll talk about in this episode called The Davy Rule, featuring his dog, Davy Whippet. I hope you'll enjoy my conversation with Frisbee Rob.
Hey, Rob, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, no, you're welcome. It's good to have you with us here on the Phys Ed Cast. So for those people that don't know who you are, can you let me know a little bit about yourself and your background and sort of what it is that you do?
For sure. So I guess today I'm known as Frisbee Rob, and that name comes about because I teach kids and adults all about what's possible with Frisbee. My full-time job is actually speaking in schools. I have messages that I share, teach Frisbee workshops, grow the sport of Frisbee, promote the sport of Frisbee. And I have a lot of things that I do outside of teaching and speaking as well. I'm still very much a competitor in Frisbee. And so currently I have 6 Guinness World Records and 13 World Championships in Frisbee. I've been doing Frisbee for about 19 years. And before that, I actually did a lot of other sports growing up as a kid. So pretty much anything you can name, I tried. And some of those sports I played quite competitively, including hockey, soccer, rugby, track and field, and golf, and swimming. And so it was an interesting childhood, just being an athlete growing up, teaching kids how to play sports. In my mind, I think every single kid at some point is, you know, wants to be that professional athlete. And at some point they realize that's probably not going to happen. And so for me, that happened multiple times, whether it was baseball or hockey. And I didn't actually start playing Frisbee until after high school. So it's been an interesting evolution to get to where I am today. I did go to university for a while. I ended up actually switching from electrical engineering to business just so I could play more Frisbee. And it's worked out pretty well. At the time, I wasn't sure if it would work out pretty well, but it's definitely worked out in the end. And yeah, just really excited to share some of my observations. As we were talking a bit before, I'm kind of the opposite of a phys ed teacher. So it's interesting to be able to share some of those reflections.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, you mentioned that you grew up playing a lot of different sports. It sounds, I mean, very similar to my background. A lot of, I guess, physical educators out there probably grew up in pretty similar circumstances, wanting to be some famous athlete or to go down the path of sports. You said you didn't get into Frisbee until later. How did that sort of come about? Where did you find Frisbee and how did that sort of become the passion of your life?
For sure, yeah. So I'd seen Frisbee multiple times throughout my life, as I'm sure most people do, whether we just, you know, had a Frisbee that we would sometimes play catch with. In high school, actually played a game of Ultimate Frisbee. We had a teacher as well that did some cool throws with an Ultimate disc. Thought it was cool, but no one was really playing it. We didn't have an Ultimate team at our school. And I was very busy playing soccer, rugby, track and field, and hockey in grade 11 and 12. And I was actually Athlete of the Year in grade 12. And so I was very much focused on those sports. For me, it wasn't even a question about doing something different. There was no way I was going to go play Frisbee because I was busy doing all these other sports. And so it was definitely an interesting evolution. Once I graduated from high school, I went to the University of Alberta first year university. Actually grew up in New Brunswick, so it was quite a trip for me. And ended up buying an Ultimate disc during Clubs Week from the University of Alberta Ultimate team. And taught myself how to throw. So that would have been in 2000. No YouTube, no Facebook, yeah. No Twitter, no Instagram. There was one website that had a couple grips. There was no videos about Frisbee that I could find at all. And so I just taught myself how to throw one disc in a field by myself. And so for the first 8 months, I just really discovered the love of throwing Frisbee, making it fly. Didn't really know much about what was possible with Frisbee other than I did shot put in high school, so I had a lot of athletic abilities from a lot of other sports, including golf and hockey. And so I got decently good at throwing a Frisbee. And then after first year university, actually moved back home, decided to go to university in Halifax. And 2 weeks after I got back from my first year university, my mother actually passed away. And so looking back on my career in sports, she was there for every single sport that I did. And Frisbee was the only one that she was not around for. And so, you know, we talk about 10,000 hours, you know, maybe it's 12,000, maybe it's 9,000, whatever the number is. I definitely have put in that time. And so grieving her death was a big part of how I got good at Frisbee. So had that not happened, who knows where I'd be. But it really allowed me to channel my energy and my focus into being out in a field by myself throwing a Frisbee, which there's not a lot of people that would ever think about doing that, because most people, when they throw a Frisbee, they play catch with a friend. But that's actually now my best event, is throwing and catching my own throw. I'm a 5-time world champion in that. I've done that on ice skates. And it's cool because you look back and you can easily trace that back. You know, Steve Jobs talks about that, about connecting the dots, looking back. And, you know, as a kid, I learned to skate, then started playing hockey, then got into Frisbee. So you can kind of combine all of those skills together. Now I do Frisbee on ice and I love it a lot. So it's been an interesting evolution, and that's something where I don't regret any of it. I am glad I didn't start playing Frisbee when I was younger, because I wouldn't have had those other skills. I probably would have quit, you know, Frisbee when I was 13, 14 years old. Like some of the other sports that people stop playing or give up because they get cut from a team. And I definitely had some challenges, some adversity, even within, you know, the realm of Frisbee getting cut from a team and things like that. But those are all messages that I bring forward now to kids, and just really encourage them to try different sports, whether it's swimming, skating, dance. It doesn't even have to be a sport. You know, there's a ton of kids, as you know, in phys ed who just like to move their body. It doesn't have to be a sport. And so part of what I try and teach is that movement for life, and just getting them understanding how they like moving and ways that they can explore and discover that.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting area of research and discussion that's going on right now in the phys ed world, is that idea of, I guess, like completely changing phys ed curriculums to move away from that multi-sport activity model where it's, you know, a basketball unit and a volleyball unit that coincide with the season that that sport team is playing, because maybe that doesn't serve the majority of kids. It serves those kids that are on those teams. But for other kids, it really is, I think, about, yeah, finding that movement that they love and finding something that's going to help them to be active for the rest of their lives. And for you, it seems like Frisbee has been that thing. I saw maybe an interview with you that you had posted on your website where you were saying that, you know, like you have friends that are, you know, in their 70s and 80s and are still playing Frisbee. So it does seem like something that is a lifelong physical activity. You mentioned that you are multiple world champion and you held these Guinness World Records. Can you speak a little bit more about, you know, how you were able to achieve those things and what some of those records are?
Yeah, and it's been interesting because a lot of kids I talk to have that dream of setting a world record someday. And I had that dream as a kid. The only real records I remember was the longest limousine, which was, I think, over 100 feet. And the heaviest and the tallest man in the world. And so I was like, well, those are never going to be records that I'm going to break. So it was kind of a dream that died away. But I ended up setting my first record was not a Guinness record. It was through an organization in canine Frisbee called Skyhounds. And so it was actually a dog disc distance record. So actually through the Frisbee, the dog caught it about 92 meters away. I remember seeing my name on the website thinking, wow, I have a world record. This is pretty cool. And then that just started my discovery, my exploration. I ended up getting invited to the World Overall Championships in 2011. Up to that point, I had only ever played ultimate Frisbee, only ever thrown an ultimate disc, thought that that's the only thing that existed with Frisbee, thought, you know, ultimate's the coolest sport ever. And it's pretty cool, but, you know, it's not the best sport. There's a lot of really cool sports out there. And, you know, whatever sport you're doing or whatever sport you like, that's the best sport for you at the time. And so one of the things that I'm really trying to do is promote what is possible with Frisbee. Frisbee's a lot like track and field. And so if you look at track and field, you know, you can throw, you can run, and you can jump. And so in Frisbee, you can throw, you can run, and you can catch. So it's really showing what is possible with Frisbee, getting people to explore, whether it's disc golf or ultimate or freestyle. And so my main strength in Frisbee is for distance. Most of my world records are either on ice skates, throwing and catching my own throw, or throwing to a dog and having the dog catch it. And so I'm all about the power to see how far I can throw a Frisbee. But there's a lot of other things that are possible. And so it's really just showing kids what is possible and having them explore those through different games, but using that as a catalyst to have them explore other ways of moving their body, just playing in general, whether it's board games, you know, spending time with their dogs, their friends, their family.
Yeah, for sure. And that was going to be my next question is, you know, what are some of the other possibilities with Frisbee? Because I think you're right. I think a lot of people just would probably see Frisbee as, you know, that game you play on the beach or the park with your friends, or ultimate. When I sort of think of Frisbee, those are the first two things that come to my mind. So you mentioned some distance events. There are this other events or other ways that people can get involved in Frisbee?
For sure. And I mean, if you look at like a track and field competition, everything except the marathon can be contained in a football stadium, essentially. And I think they recently had to redesign the javelin a few years ago because people were throwing the javelin too far. And people on the track were in danger. And so when we do a Frisbee competition, we have something called the overall, similar to a heptathlon, which is seven events. And we can't do all of that in one space. So it logistically, it's a little challenging. You know, we're doing things like throwing it as far as we can, throwing and catching our own throw, doing an accuracy competition, doing discathon, which is essentially a race through a park. You set up a course, the Frisbee has to travel the course. You have to run and throw the Frisbee through the course. And so it's usually about a kilometer long. So there's a lot of fun ways to actually just get out and play. A lot of games that you can play as well. And one of the interesting opportunities I've had is I'm on the board of directors for the World Flying Disc Federation, which is the global body of all flying disc sports. And so right now we're trying to push for ultimate Frisbee to get into the 2028 Los Angeles Olympics. And so just going through that process and being a part of some of those conversations, it puts sport at an interesting level because sometimes you look at a sport, I don't know if you remember slam ball, like 10 or 15 years ago, it was basically basketball and trampolines. So that was a pure spectator sport. You know, there was maybe 10 or 15 people actually doing it, you know, per city. Same thing, you know, living in Calgary, it's an Olympic sports city. So bobsleigh, it's not a participant sport. It's very much a spectator sport. And so I'm really interested in promoting and being a part of participant sports because you get more people actually doing it and playing it. You know, if we want to go to, you know, a kids group and do a javelin or pole vaulting demo, it's cool to watch, but it's going to be hard to get kids actually into it. Even basketball, you know, if you don't have a basketball net, you can't play basketball. And so it's looking at those sports like soccer, frisbee, hacky sack sports where you can do it anywhere, anytime, even if you only have two people, and just really trying to explore that and spinning it around and saying, you know, instead of only playing sports, how can we just teach people to play? You know, too often I talk to a lot of phys ed teachers about this, and sometimes the curriculums are very heavy on the sport and very light on the games itself. And so I've definitely been seeing that shift where more and more phys ed teachers are trying to get kids just moving and teaching them how to play games and have fun and not necessarily teaching sport only. And there's been some really cool opportunities that I've had the last couple of years to see how some of the, you know, the higher level organizations are making those decisions and how that has a trickle down effect on, you know, school curriculums and kids just moving in general.
For sure. Now, moving into, I guess, the work that you're doing now, aside from those amazing records that you have in the World Championships, you're basically in schools every single day of the year, you were telling me earlier. So when you go into a school, what is it that you're doing on a daily basis in schools?
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, so on a typical week, I'm booked 3 to 4 days. There's some weeks where I'm definitely 5 days, some weeks it's only 1 or 2 days. So booking schools and trying to get schools to pay for a program can definitely be a challenge. That's why I go all over Canada. So it's kind of have to do that. I can't really just go in one city, but it's essentially a phys ed takeover. And so I go in, I'll spend typically 30 minutes with a group of 30 to 40 students and just taking them through everything from throwing and catching, doing tricks with a frisbee, doing disc golf, throwing distance, doing a game where they're running around trying to tag each other using the frisbees. And so it's really about from a physical literacy perspective. And so I use the same disc from pre-kindergarten all the way up to grade 12. And I just change the activities to match the kids. And so too often what I'm finding, and this is a really challenging thing because a lot of schools will have poor quality discs that are donated by some organization who are trying to do, you know, good work. But usually they're terrible. They don't fly very well. They break. They're dangerous. You know, schools know what a good volleyball is, a good basketball is. It costs a lot of money. But with frisbees, a lot of these schools that I go to have spent either no money at all or have spent $1 or $2 for every single disc that they have in their phys ed room. So that's the challenge, first of all. And so just getting good discs into kids' hands is the first step. Because a lot of these kids either think they're bad throwers or they've never actually been taught or been shown how to actually throw and play games. So yeah, so going into these phys ed classes, it is a lot about showing them what's possible with frisbee. And it's also about using one disc for everyone. Because a lot of, for example, ultimate organizations will go in and try and teach ultimate frisbee. And they try to use different discs depending on the age of kids, because all they're trying to do, and you actually talked about this in one of your other podcasts about, it was, I think baseball was the example. So it's not, we're not trying to get kids to play baseball. We're trying to get them to play with a baseball, play with a bat, try different things, different games. We're not trying to make the field smaller and just play a small version of baseball. And that's basically what I'm trying to do with frisbee is, my analogy that I use with kids is swimming. I used to be a lifeguard and I used to teach swimming lessons. And the first step in swimming is to get kids putting their face in the water, blowing bubbles. So we're not trying to get them to just throw them in the water and say, go swim. And so with frisbee, a lot of it is spinning, rolling, sliding, flipping, balancing the frisbee, just getting 5 and 6 year olds comfortable with the frisbee, not being afraid of frisbees. And then as they move through, you know, grade 2, grade 3, grade 4, they can start playing catch with each other. As they move grade 5, 6, 7, they can start doing a bit more advanced skills and activities. And a lot of this has just come from, I've done about 5,000 workshops. And so one thing you learn is where the threshold of tears will come. And so, you know, typically like grade 4, 5, 6 aren't going to be crying that much if they get hit. You know, kindergarten, grade 1, tears will happen, but it's more so that it'll scare them and then they never want to touch a Frisbee again. And so it's just learning how to adapt the activities so it's appropriate for their age. Instead of trying to give them a foam Frisbee and saying, go throw these, it's not really serving them very well. So that's really the goal when I go in, is to have this action-packed 30 minutes, you know, as many things I can do with Frisbee as possible, getting them playing. So when I leave, in their mind, they love Frisbee, they want to play Frisbee. I'm having tons of schools telling me that kids are searching through the classroom bin to find Frisbees. You know, they're going out in recess throwing Frisbees. I'm getting more schools now wanting to start Frisbee clubs. And so that's the real world for me. It's not so much just going in, teaching, and then leaving. It's how can I connect what I do with the school, with the community, with the parents, with the rec department. I want to have a long lasting impact. And so I'm very cognizant of, I'm only there for 30 minutes. Sure, I can have somewhat of an impact, but you know, for them to have a caring adult, and this is through the High Five program that they talked a lot about that, but having a friend, having a caring adult, then that's when the magic really starts to happen, that they can explore those sports. So I try to be the catalyst for that excitement, I guess. And then when I leave, then it's trying to provide resources for the teachers, the schools, the parents to do more with their kids with Frisbee.
Yeah. So you talk about using one type of disc. Makes me wonder, like, what type of disc? If I'm looking to go and buy some discs for my school, what sort of discs should I be looking at, and how much would a decent disc set me back?
For sure. So, and just I'll get to that right away. But the first thing I want to say is, Skyline, Gopher, those sort of catalogs. Ideally, those would have the good discs, because there's no way that I can connect with every single school and try and sell a disc to schools. And I don't actually want to sell a disc to schools. I'd rather have the schools order volleyballs, basketballs, Frisbees, all in the same order. But the challenge is some of those companies are selling really poor quality discs because they can put their name on it. They sell it for $2. But schools don't like them. They don't really use them. And so the disc that I use right now, it's actually a dog disc. It literally does not break. I can throw it against the wall as hard as I can. So I used to use a disc before that would eventually crack because I throw it off the floor. I show kids how to skip Frisbees as well. And so the one I use now is, it's called a Hero Disc. So it's Hero Disc USA. Unfortunately, they're out of the US, so shipping and exchange and things like that is a little tricky. So that's why my next step is to try to work with these, you know, phys ed equipment catalogs to try and actually have them carry the discs. So then people can just go and order directly from them. Ultimate discs are good if you're playing Ultimate. You could also use them if you're playing disc golf, but they're way too heavy. They're way too deep for young kids. And so an Ultimate disc is not going to be the best disc for all kids to use. If you're just a high school, those are fine. But again, it's if you're throwing those in a gym, people aren't paying attention. I was at a school a couple months ago where a phys ed teacher told me that they had actually broken their orbital bone because they got hit with an Ultimate disc. And so, you know, used properly, for sure they can be safe. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people that have been hit with a basketball and, you know, broken fingers and broken noses and things like that as well. So part of that is the education and making sure that we're doing activities that are fun and safe for kids. But yeah, as far as the disc goes, the one that I use is a dog disc. It's safe for dogs to catch. And so for kids, for sure, it's going to be safe for them to catch as well.
Okay, great. And also, I know that when you're in schools, like some of the messaging that you're sending to kids around, you know, kindness and acceptance and growth mindset and stuff. It was really, really important. I think a lot of what you're talking about, you know, is that idea of being able to fail and that being okay. Can you touch a little bit on how you sort of deliver those messages to kids when you're in schools?
For sure. And this is something that, because a lot of phys ed teachers I work with the same group of kids all the time, or they only work with a couple of different grades. And so one thing that I've noticed throughout just working with different types of schools and different locations and different age of kids, for sure, boys are way less likely to actually persevere through a difficult activity compared to girls. And so one thing that I really try and encourage them and teach them that it's okay to fail. And so when I do the full school assembly, I do like a Dude Perfect trick shot in the basketball net where I throw a Frisbee and try and throw it in the basketball net. And sometimes I'll make it on the first try, which doesn't really reinforce the message, but sometimes it takes me 15 or 20 tries. And so it's showing kids that here's a guy with 6 Guinness World Records. It's okay for him to fail. So isn't it okay for us to fail? And it's also reminding a lot of kids that, you know, when they learn to skate, they learn to ride their bike. They fell over multiple times, but they got back up and they kept going. And the nice thing about Frisbee or many other sports is if you drop the disc, no harm, no foul, just pick it up and try again. And so it's really trying to give them fun activities where there's a ton of opportunities for success, but there's also opportunities for them where they might fail the first couple of times. I have had kids for sure who get really upset because they say it's too hard. I've had a few kids say that I make it look too easy. And then when they go to try it, it's not that easy. But it does teach that perseverance. And Doug Gluddy actually made a really good point in your podcast where, and I've heard this from a few people, where there's a lot of theory that's being talked about, but we're just not applying it enough. And so it's not enough to just say, this is what resilience is. We actually have to give kids an opportunity to fail and support them through that failure. And what's interesting is the younger the kid is, so typically grade 3, 4, 5, they're much more willing to keep trying compared to the older kids. And I see this with a lot of teachers. Teachers are much less likely to keep trying compared to the students. If they can't do it the first couple of times, they just pick it up and kind of wander away and help out with the students. But it's just been kind of interesting observing that, because you hear this narrative that kids need to be more resilient, but I think it's something that adults can take on as well and say, it's okay to fail. It's okay to try something and not be amazing at it right away. You know, if you don't want to be the best in the world at something, that's fine, but just at least try it. You never know, you might actually like it. So that's
yeah,
one
definitely.
Thing. And then I also, and I've shifted the message. I used to share a message about bullying, because when I was a kid figure skating, I was bullied for that and ended up quitting figure skating and going into hockey. But a big thing that I've learned the last couple of years, mainly through the Saskatoon Public School District, is the more we talk about bullying, the more it actually happens. And so anti-bullying programs actually increase bullying, whereas a pro-kindness program would actually increase kindness, which would decrease bullying. And so along with that message, I also challenge kids to set better limits on screen time. And Sherry Turkle talks about this, where when you reduce screen time, you increase empathy. So literally reducing screen time increases kindness. And so it's encouraging kids and adults to focus on what you want. And so instead of thinking, for example, don't drop, we want to instead think just catch. And so it's trying to have that message throughout the Frisbee workshops when kids are trying something, instead of saying, I can't, instead of having them say, I haven't done it yet. So it's that idea of the power of yet. And it's interesting visiting a lot. I've been to almost 400 schools and there's no consistency at all. So some schools will have a growth mindset on the wall. Some schools will have the power of yet. Some schools talk about this, about that. It's been a challenge to try and have a message that universally works. And so those are sort of the messages that I've settled on, the idea of physical literacy, resiliency, kindness, and getting kids unplugged and setting better limits on screen time. So it's, you know, those, all I'm trying to do is just have an impact as much as possible with what I do and trying to reinforce a lot of the messages that are already being talked about either in schools from the teachers or from the parents themselves. So it's not trying to reinvent the wheel and saying, here's my 5 steps to success. It's just saying, here's some messages that matter. Here's a real world example of me doing them. Now I want you to go try and do them. And then you learn from actually doing it yourself and have some fun with it.
Do you find that because maybe a lot of kids haven't had exposure to Frisbee and all the different possibilities with disc sports, that sort of levels the playing field a bit? You don't have those kids that, you know, are the basketball superstars or the soccer superstars or the hockey superstars, that it's sort of, it's fresh and it's new for everyone and it makes it a bit easier to reach those kids with those messages?
100%. And that's actually a good lesson. No matter what the activity is, if it's a brand new activity, then it does level a playing field and it allows different kids to shine for sure. And sometimes you'll have a kid who's amazing at spinning a Frisbee. You have another kid who's amazing at catching it. You have another kid who's really good at throwing it. And so by doing a variety of different skills, it allows different kids to sort of emerge. It's evolved over the years as well, but I do a challenge sometimes where I'll have them try and throw it either into a disc golf basket or a basketball net. And it allows kids the opportunity to watch other people throw, just observe. I recently took the physical literacy instructor course through Sport for Life. And I've heard this narrative a few times, but one of the things that was mentioned was, and you've talked about this actually on the podcast, which I really respect it, because you said, you know, the goal is to not maximize movement, because if that was the goal, we'd just let kids run laps the whole time. And so one thing that I try to do, for example, is line up all the kids and they throw one at a time. For sure, I could have them throw all at the same time, but by doing one at a time, you slow things down. It's that idea of interrupting. You know, they're very present in the moment. They're watching other kids throw. They're taking their turn. They're supporting each other. And they actually fall in love with throwing by getting to watch other people throw, by waiting their turn and by seeing how frisbees fly. And that's really the goal, is to just have them realize that watching a frisbee fly is pretty fun. And giving them different opportunities to try and explore that, for sure. But yeah, no, it's definitely a great point that because it's a new activity, you know, gives kids a level playing field, but also the kids who are typically the star athletes sometimes are the ones that give up first, because, you know, maybe they're a really good hockey player. They try one of the tricks, they can't do it, and they just stop because, you know, they're either in their mind, they're embarrassed, or they should be good at it. And so it teaches them that as well in a different way, that maybe they'll bring back to the next hockey practice where, hey, it's okay to actually try something that I'm not very good at. That's how you get better at it.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think, yeah, like just being able to open up those conversations with kids and put them in situations that maybe they're not in on a regular basis, and force them to, I guess, reflect upon, you know, what it feels like to fail, or what it feels like to achieve something when you've never achieved that before. So definitely sounds like an amazing program. And I think schools are obviously very, you know, you've said you've been into over 400 schools. If people wanted to get you into their school, what's the best way to go about doing that?
Frisbeerob.com. All the information is there. They can contact me through there. And the next step, so it's trying to connect all of these things as well. So, you know, looking at some of the other sports, and, you know, we were looking at the bowling curriculum. I'm doing some curriculum work for some American schools right now. And there's a bowling curriculum that's 300 pages long. And so you can imagine if a phys ed teacher is given this program, there's no way they're even going to attempt to look at it. And so it's trying to make these programs robust for phys ed teachers. A lot of schools I go to, they have to choose between either a music or a phys ed specialist, and most schools choose music. And so a lot of times you have classroom teachers trying to teach. And so it's trying to give them easily digestible curriculums. Doesn't matter what the sport is, what the activity is. And so what I find too often is it's just these huge programs that are just way too complicated. No one's actually going to follow them. And so that's one of my next steps, is to start connecting with some leaders in some of the other sports and looking at some ways that we can actually start working together. Because in reality, frisbee at a school, it's probably only going to be a week out of the entire year. And growing up as a kid, I loved that we got to play everything. And so I just want frisbee to be one little piece of that. I really want kids to try everything. And with the reality that most kids quit sports by the time they're 13. But if on the flip side, there's way more kids that are not playing sports, doing activities. And even if they're, you know, dancing or singing or playing video games, it's important to move their body. And so there's a lot of kids that would be well served just get out and do something. It doesn't have to be an organized sport 3 times a week. It can just be something that they enjoy doing that complements whatever else they're doing. And so that's kind of the next step with it, is I do love frisbee. It's my vehicle, but I think there's a bigger purpose here. And instead of trying to have all these different organizations in every single province, every single country doing their own thing, if we can try and figure out a way to work better together. And I think through the national and the federal or the global organizations, I think that's a good way to try and pass those curriculums down. You know, the global bodies of sport, you know, should be the experts and should be trying to promote and grow their sport, and then pushing that down through the other organizations. So that's the next step with what I'm doing.
Yeah, sounds great. It actually, listening to you speak, reminds me a lot of one of the previous episodes with Skylar from Spikeball, and round net, I guess, as a sport, and the way that that's just grown and taken off in the past few years as well. And I think from the way that you're speaking about frisbee, I think there's a lot of similarities there in terms of the accessibility and the fact that, you know, like anybody can do it anywhere, anytime. So I expect to see frisbee maybe becoming more visible out there in the physical education space and the recreation space. What do you think, you know, the future holds for disc sports? You talked a little bit about the Olympics, but I mean, what's next, and how do we make this become like a more visible part of the sport and physical education landscape?
For sure. Yeah, there's a lot of people working on it. For example, in Finland, there are more people playing disc golf than play hockey right now. So there's about 260,000 disc golfers, 250,000 hockey players. Disc golf only gets, I think it was less than $100,000 in funding, and hockey gets like $6 million. And so part of it is figuring out how to get more money into the sport. And that's something that I'm a part of, those conversations on the global level, trying to figure out how we can get sponsors in the sport. And the sponsor landscape has changed a lot. You know, TV is not what it used to be, social media. There's a lot of different ways to sort of promote and grow the sport. But I think part of it is, you know, engaging phys ed teachers, because we do have the kids' attention, right? You know, they might see a cool frisbee trick on Instagram, but in the space of 5 minutes, they're going to see 10 other cool tricks. You know, when, so in a lot of ways, frisbee is where skateboarding was when it first started, but because we have so many more distractions, it's going to be really tough to actually grow it just by having people seeing like Tony Hawk or playing a video game with Tony Hawk and saying, I want to be him, because there's so many other people that they can now watch and say, oh, I want to be the next, you know, famous TikTok star, the next famous YouTuber. And so I think it's really about trying to encourage kids to just do their thing and try their thing. But as a program itself, disc golf is really good for schools because there's no cost for most disc golf courses. And so schools with budgets, you know, may have to pay for a bus to get them to the course, but they don't have to rent the course. You know, so facility wise, it's very cheap. You can get, you know, class set of discs and you can play multiple different sports. So just really a lot of fun ways of doing it. So I think the next step is, you know, the work that we're doing on the global scale. There are now people playing professionally, making a really good living playing disc golf. And so there's a lot of potential within that sport. Ultimate's tough because there's not really anybody making money playing ultimate. And so, you know, you look at hockey, for example, there's a lot of money in the sport, so they can do a lot with it. Promoting wise, putting money into programs. And so, you know, there's a lot of challenges for sure, but there's also a lot of opportunities. But a lot of it is just trying to not trying to give too many options to a small group of kids. It's trying to open it up and showing the larger group of kids, hey, here's all the things that are possible. You know, you don't have to be a traditional athlete to enjoy something. Just go try it and just try and play. So yeah, the future for Frisbee is definitely bright. You know, the people that I'm working with, the people that have been growing the sport for a while, there's definitely a lot of potential. But a lot of it is this grassroots work, you know, so actually moving away from doing a lot of stuff online because there's so much noise, and just getting back and going to schools and just pounding the pavement and trying to get curriculums and disc golf courses installed, and just getting kids just saying, hey, like, this is something that I really want to do.
Yeah, I think that's a great message. And like you said, it's something that's so accessible. At my school currently, like, we're super lucky where we are. We're on a 27-acre campus. We have a forest that's right at part of our school. We're currently putting in a disc golf course on our campus. So it should be done hopefully by the summertime. And super excited to have a resource like that at our school that we can just get out and use, and the kids can use at lunchtime and after school and stuff as well. So yeah, definitely excited about maybe picking your brain at some point once we get that up and running, about ways that we can best utilize that. I'm conscious of time because I'm trying to keep these between about 30 and 40 minutes. So I'm going to ask you three really quick questions that I ask all of my guests on the podcast. So when I ask them, just, you know, the first thing that comes into your head, that sort of question response type thing. So my first question is going to be something that people don't know about you, Rob.
So a lot of people don't know that I wrote a children's book. I wrote a children's book with the dog that I set some world records with, and sold about 850, 900 copies. We're in a few chapter stores, did some book readings, but not something that I really talk about as much. But yeah, it was kind of cool to write a book. And
what's the book called?
It's called The Davy Rule. And the idea of the book is, if you think about bucket filling, so bucket filling, we talk about it being a flip on the golden rule. And so that's why we call it The Davy Rule.
Nice. Is that book still available? Can people get their hands on it?
There's not many copies left because I haven't done a second publishing, but that's the next step.
So it's a rare, if you get your hands on one, hold on to it because it might be worth it.
Self-publishing, if anyone's thinking about writing a book, definitely reach out to me. I would not recommend self-publishing because you have to do all the work. people are like, oh, but you keep 100% of the money, but it's, you have to do all the work. It was fun to be able to do that project, and hopefully there's some more books in the future.
For sure. All right. So my next question is, like, you talked a little bit about failure earlier, and if you've listened to other episodes of this, you know that failure is something that keeps coming up again and again. And my opinion on it is, I think that like failure is like one of the best things. Like if you're failing, then it shows that you're trying new things, you're willing to think outside the box. So can you give an example of a time that, you know, you failed, and then how that failure helped you to be successful?
Yeah, I have many cases, and it's not so much big failures that I have, but there are a lot of small failures that just continue to reinforce the value of that. So a couple weeks ago, it was the first day back after winter break. I was out of school for 3 days. I was supposed to be at the school for 8:30 to get set up to start at about 8:50. And I woke up at 9 o'clock, and school is about 20 minutes away. So I called the principal right away. I actually had a missed call from her and drove there as fast as I could. Was doing a full school assembly. And so the first thing I said to the kids, you know, I said, I slept in, you know, it was my mistake, you know, first day back from winter break. Just, maybe I'm not used to waking up in time. Who knows what happened, but it's about accepting your failure. I think that is the most important thing, is accepting that you made the mistake, and how can you learn from that? How can you move forward? And so that's something, you know, I've driven 36 hours each way from Calgary to Houston, Texas, with a dog to throw frisbees, and we came fourth in a competition that we were out throwing everybody, and he just didn't get catches, and I didn't throw as well as I should have. And so it's a hard pill to swallow when you have to drive 36 hours back home with a dog who doesn't care if you won or lost. He just likes chasing frisbees. And how do you process that failure? So I've had many of those opportunities, and that's the thing. The more you try, the more you put yourself out there, you're bound to keep failing. But you know that when you do fail, it's going to be pretty awful for, you know, the first little bit, but you're going to learn from that. You're going to be stronger from that.
For sure. My last question is, you know, if you had the world's attention, if you had 60 seconds to speak to every single person in the world, what would be your message?
I think I'm sharing it right now. The biggest thing is to find your thing. It doesn't matter what your thing is. Your thing might be different every couple years. You might not actually find your thing until you're 50 or 60 or 70 years old. There's no, you know, wrong time, right time. Like it's when it happens. So there's a lot of people that are worried about, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. You know, I only started doing this 5-6 years ago, and who knows what's going to happen next year, 5 years from now, even next week. And so I think that's the biggest thing, is just learn to be adaptive. Try to not have, and Oprah used this term years ago, but try to not have a blueprint for life that you can't change. Things are constantly changing, and it's just accepting them. You know, even if you have no control over that, that's the biggest thing I try and think about in my life, is if it doesn't affect me, I have no control over it, I try to not worry about it. You know, there's a lot of really terrible things happening in the world, but if you get bogged down with all of those all the time, then you never get to actually live your life. And I think, you know, the more that we're inundated with social media, with news, we're seeing a lot of negative things happening. You know, it's very easy to think that the world is not a good place. But if you just remove yourself from that, spend time with the people that you care about, doing the things that you care about, you know, I think the world will have a much different perspective. And so I think that's really valuable for a lot of people to do.
Yeah, well, I definitely appreciate you spending the time to talk to me today for this episode. You've mentioned that, you know, obviously the website frisbeerob.com, social media, other ways for people to get in touch with you.
Yeah, so Frisbee Rob everywhere. Yeah, just Google it, and
yep.
Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube.
Okay, great. Well, again, thank you so much. I think your message is really fantastic. I'm really excited to share this episode with everybody. Like you said, you know, like Frisbee is just the vehicle that you're using to spread some pretty amazing messaging to kids all around Canada and across North America, and hopefully, you know, across the world. I'd like to, you said at the start, if when I said messages for if everyone in the world was listening, you said you're sharing it now. And I'd love to think that everyone in the world was listening to this podcast. But unfortunately, I think we're not quite there yet. I'd like to be there at some point. But I'm sure that all the people who have listened to your message on this podcast will be reaching out and contacting you and hopefully getting you into their school. So I really appreciate your time and thanks for speaking with me.
No, thank you. And just a quick aside, 2 years ago, I went to Israel, taught Frisbee for 3 weeks. And a lot of these messages apply over there for sure. So I will definitely share this, and your podcast will be heard in Israel whenever this comes out. So you're going
to be great. I haven't made it to Israel yet. It's on my list of places to go. So maybe once the podcast gets over there, I might find a way to get over there.
I hope so.
No worries. All right. Well, thanks so much, Rob.
Thank you for having me.
So there you have it, Frisbee Rob McLeod, super interesting guy, and an interesting side note to this conversation. Prior to our conversation, I'd never met Rob before. I'd never heard of him. He actually reached out to me via email, completely cold, and said like, hey, I'd love to be on your podcast. I'm really into Frisbee. Here's my website. Check it out. And I did, and I was super interested, and I'm so glad that I had the opportunity to connect with Rob. That being said, if you know someone who's interesting that has an amazing story in the physical education, sport, coaching, physical activity world, I'd love to hear about it. I'd love to have them on the show. So please let me know who you would love to hear on the Phys Ed cast, and let me get in touch with them and see if we can get them on the show. You can contact me through all my social media or via email, nathan@iphysed.com. And I'd love to hear some suggestions of people that you'd love to see on the Phys Ed cast. For this week, that is our episode. I look forward to joining you again really soon with another episode of the Phys Ed cast.